It's a pleasure now to welcome Paul Tellers, who is an architect and planner, and who knows the man behind he is the man who follows the yellow brick buildings, Henry Hornbostel's signature yellowish brick, although I don't think he limited himself to that. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And it's nice to meet you. Are you originally from Pittsburgh?
No, I am not. I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania.
And what brought you here?
Work. I came to work. I was in the Peace Corps as a young man, and after the Peace Corps, looking for the best place to, for a good job and a place to work, I landed in Pittsburgh.
Well, it's nice to meet you. When you were in the Peace Corps, were you an architect at that time?
Well, I was not. I had recently graduated. I was, a graduate architect. I was not yet licensed. I got licensed, when I came to Pittsburgh, actually.
What a great experience that had to be. You must have had a lot of skills to lend. I know this is not why we're talking, but that
right.
had to be a great experience as an architect in the Peace Corps.
Yes.
What did you do?
Oh, I was in Malawi in South Central Africa, and worked for the government of Malawi, and they were building, a new capital had already been established, and I was assigned to do a new four-story office building in the new capital.
Wow.
So it was quite an adventure and, a great experience.
I'll bet. Well, Paul knows a lot about Henry Hornbostel, and he's probably concluded that I went to Carnegie Mellon because those of us who did learn about him, whether we're architects or not, because a lot of his buildings are on what was Carnegie Institute of Technology's campus, but he certainly has many more things to his credit, and Paul is going to be talking about Henry Hornbostel's impact on Pittsburgh during a January 31st virtual storytelling event sponsored by Doors Open Pittsburgh, or made possible as part of its program. Tell us, I'd love to have you whet our appetite about Mr. Hornbostel and some of his work.
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. And as you said, I was the university architect at Carnegie Mellon, and what brought him to Pittsburgh? He's not a Pittsburgh-born architect. He was born in Brooklyn, and he came to Pittsburgh because he won a design competition that was, Andrew Carnegie, the wealthy industrialist, planned to build technical schools, and the city had provided land adjacent to Schenley Park, and so there was a design competition, and it was the first of many that he won, but to build the Carnegie Technical Schools. And so he met Carnegie and the others and designed the first building in 1904 and did all the buildings through the mid-20s. So you mentioned the yellow brick. Yes, so all of those older Beaux-Arts Renaissance Revival buildings that people may be familiar with, the College of Fine Arts, Hammerslag Hall, Baker Hall, all of those were designed by Henry Hornbostel.
Was yellow brick a spec that he was given, or was that something he adopted sort of as a signature look in many of his buildings?
I think, I don't know if there's a, crispy, clear answer to that, but I think it's an economical material. It's made in Catani up the Allegheny River. If you drive on Route 28, you might still see brick yards in Catani.
Yes.
and so it's an economical material, number one, but also one where he could enhance it with a limited amount. Instead of making all stone buildings, which would have been costly. There's a lot of granite, and then there's a lot of terracotta added, so he could make these very impressive buildings that had the look that, you know, that Carnegie and the others may have wanted. And it's a light-colored brick. You know, we think of, you know, other historical revival styles in red brick, like Federalist or Georgian or whatever, but the Beaux-Arts architects, and he had studied architecture at the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris, so he could, you know, the light-colored brick, this is my theory and maybe the theory of other architects or scholars, that the light-colored brick gave, at a quick glance, kind of the, you know, the appearance of stone. He did not want to do dark buildings. He wanted to do, you know, these, I call them Renaissance Revival style buildings in terracotta, granite, and brick.
I'm looking at the poster for Henry Hornbostel's impact on Pittsburgh, presented by Doors Open Pittsburgh on January 31st. And I'm seeing the beautiful ceilings of what I think is Baker Hall at Carnegie Mellon, if memory serves. Some folks might recall the sloped hallways within that building and many, well, several other buildings at Carnegie Mellon. Do you know the story as to whether that was part of Andrew Carnegie's vision, or was that a Hornbostel solution to an issue?
That would be, you know, the architect's solution to, and the who was Henry Hornbostel. So it was Hornbostel's solution to a sloped site. So, yeah, the site that was given by the city was, as I said earlier, face Schenley Park. It did not go to Forbes Avenue. So it was between Schenley Park and a ravine. So it, on one edge, on the, let's say, the west edge, it was Junction Hollow. So that deep ravine between the Carnegie Museums,
right,
and then Carnegie Institute of Technology, they're now Carnegie Mellon. So Junction Hollow still has trains running on it, and it's a valley. But then there was a spur from that valley, so there was another valley on the other side. So it was a slope site, the high point being where the College of Fine Arts is today, and then the low point being where Hammerschlag is today. And that sloped steeply after Hammerschlag down into Junction Hollow. So he was given a slope site. So his solution, his competition-winning solution, was buildings with, well, a central mall in the same scale that the third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, had used to design the University of Virginia. So if we think of the University of Virginia and the rotunda at the high point, Jefferson had done a similar scheme with ranges of buildings on either side of an open mall. So Hornbostel kind of borrowed that idea. I don't think he ever wrote about it, but it's pretty clear he did. And so long buildings with a central corridor and then wings off of each side of the corridor with classrooms and laboratories.
Wow.
So the wings, if you envision, if you've walked the campus, they kind of step down, but the central corridor then connects those step down wings, and it's sloped at Baker Hall. Instead, you could have the corridor step down, but then they were teaching industrial skills. So imagine in the early 20th century, the heavy equipment, you know, maybe engines or, you know, pulleys and, you know, I don't know, winches and things that were being used by students to learn technology. And this heavy equipment could be wheeled up and down the slope corridors to the different laboratories.
So function kind of followed form. That's really, that's fascinating. I didn't know that. And his impact here in the area goes beyond the university, right? There's, my memory is there's other notable buildings that he's behind.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think it's remarkable that his skill at winning design competitions. So when, you know, when people wanted to build an important building, let's say the Soldiers Memorial in Oakland or the City County Building downtown, they held design competitions. And they still do, but they were very common in the early 20th century. And he kept winning design competition after design competition. So, yes, he did the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial, which is across from the Cathedral of Learning. He did Rosh Shalom Temple, you know, on Fifth Avenue. He did the City County Building downtown. And he did the original, not only the original plan for Carnegie Tech, now Carnegie Mellon, but he did the original plan for the University of Western Pennsylvania, now the University of Pittsburgh.
I didn't know that.
Yes, all of these were design competitions. To me, it's like he won like four or five Super Bowls in a row. I mean, he just kept winning these competitions.
Do you think, certainly he had lots of talent, but did he also have a talent for being, you know, for show personship, for actually, like, being able to put sizzle in his presentations, do you think?
Yes, I think definitely. I mean, I often wish I could have met this man because it's pretty well established that he was quite a personality, you know, a bon vivant, you know, he was dressed very in a showy way and was very popular. He was the first dean of the School of Architecture at Carnegie Mellon. Very popular with his students. So you can kind of picture him presenting his work to clients, that he would be very, you know, convincing and maybe even, you know, energizing.
Oh, what a fascinating person to think about. I'm guessing he was born in the 80s or 70s. Do you know offhand?
No, well, he was born in 1867, and okay. What I find so interesting about that is the same year, 1867, same year that Frank Lloyd Wright was born. So wow. That is the last similarity between these two architects. They went off in very different directions, but they were both born in 1867.
I don't picture Frank Lloyd Wright entering competitions. Maybe he did, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's kind of my way or the highway, I would think, for his work. Well, Paul, this is all going to be happening on January 31st at 7. And you can take part in it virtually if you go to doorsopenpgh.org. And these are great presentations, and you'll get a chance to hear all the stories that we're talking about right now with somebody who really knows everything there is to know, Paul Tellers, about Henry Hornbostel and his impact on Pittsburgh. Anything else you'd like to share?
Well, maybe I'll note a
sure,
second
of course.
Similarity between Frank Lloyd Wright and Hornbostel. They both lived long lives, and as we know, Frank Lloyd Wright, for one thing, did amazing. He did work in Pittsburgh through his close connection to Edgar Coffin. So that's another story. It's actually I did a virtual storytelling for Doors Open on Frank Lloyd Wright in Pittsburgh. But they both lived long lives and practiced. I had very interesting careers, but maybe I'd just note that. But I also wanted to say, you mentioned we'll hear the stories on Monday at the Doors Open virtual storytelling, but I want to promise people that do tune in, there will be a lot of images, too. There will be a lot to look at. So we'll see the work of Frank Lloyd Wright as well as talk about it.
Well, Paul, I hope you get a great turnout, and please keep in touch. It's a great topic to have him at the focal point, given how many touches he has on the region here. And we appreciate your being here this morning. Thank you.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Paul Tellers in Doors Open Pittsburgh, January 31st by Zoom. So there will be images as well as audio for you to listen to.